Hello and welcome to my dental hygiene school experience. My name is Dax Ska, and each episode I'm going to share my own experience of dental hygiene school. The highs, the lows, the funny, and the real. Thank you for joining me on my journey, and here's another episode right now. What's up, dental nerds? I am Dax Ska, dental assistant and future guy genist. Now, this episode is exciting because this is my 20th episode. Yay! It's a very small milestone, but for me, I still like to celebrate it. For me, all the little things are worth celebrating, and that's also true in hygiene school. I say, you know, if you do well on a quiz, even though it may be worth 1% of your grade, celebrate it. You know, it's all building towards a bigger future. So this episode is going to talk about semester 3. And, you know, I talked about semester 2 on the last episode, but this one, semester 3 is going to require 2 episodes, because on this episode, I'm just talking about clinic. And, you know, it's a doozy, but, you know, it's nothing to be afraid of. It's just something that you got to go through. But anyway, I don't know, I guess let's just jump right into it, because, you know, semester 3 clinic, it's a big deal. All right, semester 3. Where to start? Well, like I said, I'm just going to be talking about clinic. We'll cover the other classes in the next episode, but clinic. Need I say more? Well, I will, because that's why I'm doing a whole episode about it. Anyway, so last semester, clinic, we called it pre-clinic, actually. And we were just working on each other. So for 2 hours, you worked on your patient, which was your classmate. And then you switched and they worked on you. Well, this semester, clinic was no longer working on each other, but actual patients. These are people that are not necessarily dental people, but they are not people in your program. Well, in your, to be more specific, not in your class. So, I just remember, like, getting into clinic, I felt like we were not ready. None of us felt ready. But you go forward with it. You know, it's just, you kind of jump in scared and you do it. I mean, that's kind of what it is. You have to go out of your comfort zone to do stuff like this. And I don't know, I just remember we hadn't even learned everything we needed to be able to complete an appointment with a patient. Basically, I had my first appointment seeing a patient, and I had no clue what to do. Now, in pre-clinic, we had done the parts of the appointment, but not all at once. We would do a little piece here, different class, we'd do another piece here, you know, but when you put it all together, it seems like a very daunting task. And these tasks, we had done maybe once or twice before. Twice realistically, you know, first time on a type of aunt, second time on a classmate, third time on an actual patient. So at least working one-on-one, or not one-on-one, but, you know, working with an instructor to give you feedback, you know, it's, anyway, I'm just like reliving it. So it's like coming back to me. So basically we had not gone through a full appointment. Our very, very first class, we worked on classmates. And we went through an abbreviated version of going through an appointment. But it still seemed very disjointed and didn't really know what was coming next, even though we were given a task list, like, here's what we're going to do, this, 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 and this. There's just something about putting it all together that just is overwhelming. But, you know, it seems like that at first. So I don't want to, if you're considering hygiene school and you're hearing this and you're like, I don't know, don't let that deter you, because it's going to feel like that at the beginning. But once you get into it, you will find your rhythm. You will find you not referring to your notebook as often to know what's going to come next in your appointment. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It was a little unsettling, but talking to cohorts ahead of us, when they were in our shoes, they felt the same way. So it's not like when you feel like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. You're not the only one that feels that. There's a classroom full of other classmates that feel just the same way as you. And anyone who says, oh, I got this, like they're not worried about it. I kind of feel like either they already know what they're doing, meaning they shouldn't be in hygiene school, or because they're, you know, they've already gotten graduated or something. I don't know. I'm just making this up off the top of my head. But I feel like for the most part, everyone feels that way. So we had clinic manuals that we made. So we were given assignments the first semester, or I guess second semester, I should say. And we were creating a book, and that book was going to be our own reference manual into what we use when we're in clinic. So if we're like, oh, okay, so what is hypertension when you're taking someone's blood pressure? Then you can turn to that page and you can see the graph and or the chart and see like, oh, okay, so if it's this, okay, then they're considered hypertension or pre-hypertension. It's just a nice manual to go back to because they're not going to provide you with one. Part of learning what you need to do is making it yourself. And so I'd made my book. And of course, like at the beginning of the semester, I'm like, oh, I have all these great plans. Everything's going to be in color. Like I was going to go to the print shop and print everything. It was going to be wonderful. And then with everything so busy in the semester, it just got away from me. And I was at a point where I'm like, I don't need it in color. I'm going to print it in black and white. And so the day that it was due, so the night before, I was working on it throughout the semester. But the day before it was due, I had finalized everything on my computer. Then I went to school the next day, the day it was due, and I went extra early so I could print it off and fold all my pieces of paper and put them in plastic sleeves. And I got what I got, you know. But, you know, there was a lot of good information in there. I definitely used a lot that will help me. So I have, like, the order of appointments. There's so much that goes into it. Anyway, if you have to make something like that, do a good job because it will affect your future in when you're actually working with patients. Anyway, I feel like I'm going off on a tangent. I need to stay the course here so I don't lose you guys. But yes, so going into clinic your first time, even your first couple times, is a little daunting, but it's doable. It's so, and then during your during their semester in clinic, you're given a set of requirements that you need to do. It seems like a mountain of requirements, especially since being your first semester with seeing actual patients, you're not really sure how to navigate this and, you know, how to best prioritize everything. Now, I've heard at some schools, it sounds like the requirements are more about how many patients you see, but at my school, it's more focused on certain criteria. So making sure that you see certain things. They'll give you a list. Anyway, there are semester requirements and there are two-year requirements. So the semester requirements, obviously, you take care of them in that particular semester. The two-year requirements, as long as you get them done sometime throughout the 2 years, then that counts. Something to consider if you're in my situation, look for opportunities to double up on your requirements, meaning that you can complete, So double up on your requirements. So what I mean by that is if you, or I guess double dip would be another way to say that, but you have one task and if you can get it signed off on multiple requirements, that is a very efficient use of your time. So for example, maybe for the semester, you need to get an FMX with less than a set number of errors. Let's say no more than 5 errors for that semester. But also on your 2-year requirements, you have an FMX that needs to be done. So right there for one task, you got 2 signatures. You got 2 requirements signed off. You just saved yourself more work. So not only are there certain requirements, but in those requirements, there are certain competencies you need to complete. So I think I mentioned this before, how competency is basically proving you know how to do a certain skill. So whether that be, let's say, using an Explorer, you want to be able to show that you know how to use it. And this is different because now we're not doing it on Typodont like we were doing last semester. We're doing it on an actual person, and it's not even a classmate. It could be potentially a stranger. And so the stranger, the patient, is sitting there, and you're having your instructor sitting over your shoulder, and you're demonstrating your skill. So the patients know that they're going to hygiene school. At least they should know if you properly told them before they sat in the chair, when you first talked to them. They know that they're at a hygiene school. So they realize that there's a certain leeway, a certain amount of patience that will be given, because you're learning and they're aware of it. And also, you're under direct supervision of your instructors and a dentist. So it's not like they're getting shoddy care or anything like that. But for something like this, when you are having a competency, be mentally prepared for that situation. I know that you are mentally strong and you can remain calm when you complete the observation or the competency, and you can do it like a professional. And you want to remember that when you're in clinic. It can seem kind of intimidating, but I find for the most part, the instructors, they're just doing their job. And I might be repeating myself, I think I said this before, but you're doing a skill, they're watching you, and they grade you on it. And generally, I don't feel like the instructors are being biased one way or another, they're just doing their job. But getting to wrap this all up, this part of it, my advice for clinic is to be prepared. So you want to be aware of who your patients are, what requirements they fulfill for you, and be aware of how much time is left in the semester. And that last one is huge. And if you are struggling, tell someone. You can work with your instructors and your classmates to set you up for success. Instructors, they can modify minor things for you to get sign-offs. And I say that very carefully because you can't just assume, like, oh, this is close enough. It's something you want to talk to your instructor about. Sometimes, if someone has a classification and it's kind of on the fence, like maybe they could go this way or the other, and you're missing one, they might be willing to count it as the one that you're missing. But again, that's very case by case, and I'm not saying this will work everywhere with everyone. But they do, generally, instructors do want you to succeed. So they are willing to work with you as long as you're willing to work with them and you're not trying to be difficult or, anything like that. You can also work with your classmates, and the way you can do that is trade patients. So suppose you have a patient and you're like, oh, this is my third LG, light generalized patient, but you need a light. Your classmate has a light, but they need an LG. Well, if that works out quite nicely, or maybe it's not like that, maybe they need a patient that requires sealants. Your patient may require sealants, but you don't need that, supposedly. There's a way you can trade off. And there's many ways you can do, like, there. You just want to talk to your classmates. You want to communicate with people. That's super important. And especially like halfway through the semester, you want to evaluate things and you want to see, okay, do I have about half my requirements? And maybe you won't, but that's okay because if this is your first semester in clinic, you're going to need time to kind of get up to speed. But as the semester goes on, your speed should be increasing. So here's a sample scenario on how to get your requirements. And this is like, I definitely put thought into this scenario. So this is not going to be every patient, but this is how you can kind of double dip on your requirements or your what you need. Anyway, let me just say it. So suppose you have a patient and this patient has COPD. So you can't put the dental chair back all the way, meaning that you will have to modify treatment meeting a 2-year requirement. So there's one. This patient also qualifies as a light generalized patient, meeting that requirement. Suppose this is your first patient and you need to take an FMX and a pano on them. You can get your FMX for a patient signed off on the semester requirements and the 2-year requirements, as well as the pano for the semester and 2-year requirements. When scaling the teeth, the instructor says that we won't need to numb the patient, but the patient says they are a little uncomfortable. So the instructor says, let's use Orokix. That's a 2-year requirement. You also attempt the competency for the 11-12 Explorer, And you pass that one. Yay. You also notice a large embrasure space in the patient's mouth. So for this patient, you demonstrate an interproximal brush so they can adequately clean the area that the floss doesn't reach. This may happen, all these requirements may happen over 3 to 6 appointments, or this whole scenario, I should say. But with this one patient, based on this scenario, you will get 9 sign-offs. That's huge. And make sure you're getting at least some sign-offs every single session you have clinic. And I know it seems really tough. Like sometimes you just feel like you just need to get through the appointment, but you need to have at least one sign-off to keep up with the pace. You want to do that. That's super important. And something else you want to do, like I said, be prepared. Do your homework on your patients. So if you are able, get the patient to fill out the health history, including the list of medications and any registration paperwork before their appointment. See if they can email them to you. I even had one patient where she lived 10 minutes away, so she's like, I'll just drop it off, you know. Whatever, that's anything you can do to save time during the appointment is big. Now, for me, in my class, for the list of medications, we had to go through one by one, every single medication, and we had to go through this book that described the medication, the effects it has on the oral health, and any contraindications, things to consider, any like epicautions. It'll kind of give you like the whole picture. So when you're looking at this one by one, if you're considering giving them anesthetic, you can look at their medication list and be like, oh, okay, I see this particular medication has an epicaution, so maybe they cannot have epinephrine for some reason. So then you can use a different anesthetic that doesn't contain that. And you got to stay organized. I mean, if you don't, it's going to be really tough to stay at the pace and keep things from getting confused. You know, like, sure, you have one or two patients, you can keep track of that. But as time goes on, you're going to get more and more patients, and it's going to be harder and harder to keep track. So you want to be able to look up the patient in your school's dental system. You can look up, or well, I guess not look them up, but put them in the system, because quite often, at least for me, I had to put in my own patients and get their whole registration in the computer set up. And then I looked up their medications, any dental concerns that they might have, and I can prepare for any potential modifications. So suppose we are going to be scaling someone's teeth and we cannot use an anesthetic with epinephrine. Well, then I can use a different kind of anesthetic, and I will let my instructor know before the clinic session. So when we do our huddle before the session, I can mention that to my instructor. And I'll have that set up before the patient even sits in the chair. If the patient has asthma and they require an inhaler, you can text them the day before and ask them to bring it to their appointment. You know, that way you're being prepared and you're getting all your ducks in a row. And then I'm sure the patient, first of all, you can confirm their appointment to make sure that they'll be there, because I know sometimes if they don't get a reminder the day before, they don't show up. So you can remind them and say, hey, I just wanted to make sure that you'll be bringing your inhaler to your appointment tomorrow. There you go. You've made contact with them. You can know that they'll be there. So that kind of takes a load off. At least my mind, I felt like if I knew I had confirmed with them, even if they were super reliable, it was just one less thing to stress about. One thing I did notice is that when you're in school, at least at a school with the set of requirements that I have, my primary focus isn't necessarily patient care. That is part of it, but it's more about getting your requirements. So this means near the end of the semester, if your patient doesn't fulfill your requirements, then it's your best interest as the student to wait until next semester to see them again. So this will allow you to see patients who meet the requirements you need. In my mind, I feel like this isn't really right, but then again, this is hygiene school. The patients have to understand that this doesn't work like a regular dental office. I mean, we do a lot that a regular dental office does, but there are certain things that do not follow. Like, they will not get a 1-hour appointment because I mean, if you're in your first semester, you could spend an hour just filling out paperwork or just taking x-rays. Like, time goes by so fast in clinic. And, I feel like it's not the best way. But, if the patients are aware, they might be a little frustrated. But, this is, if you don't get your requirements, you may not move on to the next semester. So, patient care versus your requirements. So, I think that's unfortunate, but it's the reality. In my program, if you're scheduled to see a patient but your patient doesn't show, your grade goes down. This is very true, The first time this happens, though, they usually won't mark you down. I mean, technically, it's not your fault, especially if you've done everything that you can. But, it's just something that happens in the real world, and that will happen in dental hygiene school. But after your first time where you don't get marked down, every time after that, you will lose points. And not only that, but the patients you do need to see, you will have less time to complete your semester requirements. So if you know that you have one patient who, you need to get sealants on them, and then they don't show for their appointment, well, looking at how many weeks are left, and say there's only 3 weeks left, the last appointment or the last clinic day is ac or your last day for where you normally would have clinic is actually to meet with your instructor to talk about your semester. So there's one less appointment, and then you have a few other booked appointment times. If they only have one appointment time left, you better hope they show up for that one. It's in your best interest just to get the staff taken care of as early as you can. There's a lot less stress in it. So I will talk more about getting patients and all that goes into it in another episode. I know I've kind of talked a little bit about it, but I want to do a portion of an episode at least to kind of talk more about it. I'm going to kind of ask questions to other people and see if they have ideas because I know some schools provide patients and others don't, and mine is one that doesn't, but I'll get into that more later. So a few other things that were new this semester is we had to log how we're spending our time in clinic. So there were certain tasks that are timed, for if we're doing a perio chart and we want to do the whole mouth, we have to write down our start time and our stop time. So, and this was going towards some of our requirements. So, like if we do the perio chart, we'll go through and then the instructor will check all our numbers, and if we are within a reasonable range, then they will mark us off, like we'll get our sign off for it. Or another example would be if you had to complete an intraoral or extraoral exam, so that's the head and neck exam, you got to do that in a set amount of time. So you write down your start time, you say, okay, I started the intraoral exam here, and so I go through all the steps of that, and then I write down my stop time. We'd also have a sign-up sheet to request our instructor, so I would say more often than not, your instructor is going to be with another student. And so, you can't just stand there and be like, okay, I'm ready for you. They're not going to be paying attention to anything but what's right in front of them because what they're doing is so involved. And so we have this wonderful sign-up sheet. You just say like, hey, okay, it's like this time, I'm in this room. Please come see me when you're available. And like, you don't even say that. You just write down your name. They know they'll mark off the last student they saw, and they'll look who's next on the list. And it's really great because then you can go back to your room and work on other things with your patients. So suppose like you go through and you're at a stopping point where you can't move any further, then you can go back and look on your paperwork and see, oh, they forgot to fill this out, or you can ask them more questions. Suppose they have like a concern about po a possible cavity, you can ask them more questions. Hopefully your x-rays are available by then if you don't have digital. And you can look over them and see if you see any potential x-ray or potential x-rays, potential caries. So, I mean, ultimately, you just want to always be doing something. And like, let's say I wanted to do my observation for a Gracie scalar. I would write my name down on the list, and the instructor would get to me when it was my turn. It's a very simple system. So I would just require, or I would complete anything that doesn't require approval, or I can just practice my skill. Like, okay, so I'm working on my Gracie. I'm going to go into my patient's mouth. I'm going to practice that skill, because in who knows when, it could be 5 minutes, it could be 20 minutes. And if my instructor is coming, I want to be ready. So there's a golden time to work on your skill. You should never have nothing to do, because your time in clinic is so limited. And I know for me, like, we were given, it was about a 4 hour session, probably slightly less with your patient, but you only have so many of those in the semester, and you want to make sure you're using those to the maximum ability. Now, the instructor to student ratio for me was one instructor to five students. And I know that sounds pretty good, but sometimes it can be tough to get more than a few requirements in a clinic session. So I know, like, for me, when we would have our huddle before our clinic session, we say, like, what we're completing this appointment. And I'm like, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do that, I want to do that. And my instructor's like, okay, that's not realistic. Why don't we just focus on maybe these two or three things? And some of them are for sign-offs, some of them are just because you need to get it done in the appointment. I like to be ambitious, but I am limited by how many opportunities I get with the instructor. So when you get your instructor, make that time count. It's so important, because I know if the instructor, like if you're not being serious about your doing your requirement, the instructor may leave, or they say, I think you need more practice, sign up again when you're ready. You're going to lose so much time that way. So it's important that you make that time count. I remember that sometimes it was my checkout time for my patient and the instructor wasn't available. We cannot have our patient check out until we get that signed off. So I would write my name down on the sign-up sheet, and if I'm scaling, I would just continue scaling because, excuse me, because it's not my fault that I'm not getting the checkout time. So, and that's totally okay, because I know for me, the checkout times were a guideline just so that we don't flood front desk with, you know, 18 patients. Like, we're all ready to check out at the same time. So, you know, that is something to consider, but also if you have the extra time, use it, because it is so wonderful to have. And, you know, like, suppose I took x-rays that day and I'm just waiting to check my patient out. I can set the computer ready for the checkout, because that doesn't take long. But if I'm still waiting, I will review those x-rays and look for any retakes I may need to do, which we would complete at the next appointment. And sometimes an instructor would approve the checkout, but then won't even look at my x-rays, you know. But that's okay, because checkout time kind of gets hectic. That's okay. It can be reviewed when you do your notes at the end, and then sometimes, even then, maybe not until the next appointment. But at least you'll be ready and tell the instructor this is which retakes I need to do. Now, one thing that we used in our school is a risk assessment and a dental health care plan. I'm not sure how common this is, but the risk assessment, I think, is quite common. The dental health care plan, I don't know. I just know at my school we use it. But what this means is that we evaluate the patient's dental habits. We review the x-rays, the visual exam. We review everything. And what we're looking for is the potential risk for oral cancer or caries. We use all the information that we collected during our exams. And we want to identify weaknesses in the patient's home care and what the plan is to improve their oral health. So this is super important. So if you've gone for your dental appointment and your hygienist seems to not look at all that stuff, they are looking at it, but because it's so deeply ingrained in their mind, they're more looking for where the weaknesses are. They're not going through every single step. So they will notice things and they will offer opportunities for you to improve your oral health. So that way you're less likely to get caries or periodontal disease. And it's also important because it will determine the instruction we give the patient, what home care aids we give them, and what kind of follow-up we need to do at their next appointment. So, for example, if a patient takes a medication that causes dry mouth, we may recommend a mouthwash to help with that. So there are mouthwashes that can help with dry mouth. However, if the patient is allergic to an ingredient in the mouthwash, or they're just unwilling to use it, we'll look at other options that will fit their lifestyle. In this, there's no A plus B equals C. Every situation is tailored to the patient's needs and habits. If a patient doesn't floss, you need to find out why. You know, like this is in school, they talk about critical thinking so much. And, you know, I hate it. But the thing is, when you do your critical thinking, you become a lot more effective at what you do. So if the patient doesn't floss, is it that they just don't do the habit, or is it that they, you know, we need to look deeper into it. If they're just not in the habit, I would encourage them to start slowly with every other day or even 3 times a week, because, you know, it's better than nothing. But suppose your patient is a mom who has 3 young kids and she feels like she doesn't have the time. Find out what her schedule is like. I did hear one example of a mom where she would take a bath. Like she had that was like her one time to be alone and just enjoy her self-care. Well, the person was, I don't know if it was a dental assistant or a hygienist, but they recommended, hey, that's an excellent time to floss. I mean, it is part of self-care and there's no distractions. And, you know, you just add it into your self-care routine. And also, you know, just for all this, I think creativity does help to some degree, especially, you know, working with patients. You gotta, you know, use your critical thinking and think outside the box. You can't take a one-size-fits-all approach because each patient is different and they have different needs and there are different barriers for them to achieving their optimal oral health. That's something I think about when I work with patients, and I will carry that with me into my career. Anyway, that's all for today. On the next episode, I'll talk about the classes I took in semester 3. Now, here's something I want you to pay attention to. If you are enjoying this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you left a review. It would really be helpful for getting my podcast seen by more people. And you can also just share this podcast with your dental friends so they can hear about my adventures. Maybe they're also considering going to hygiene school. You know, just pass it along to them. And for the reviews, I know that Apple has reviews, so you can go there. If you want to give me 5 stars, that's awesome. And I'm going to leave a link in the show notes. This is something I've mentioned before, but I want to mention it again. This link that I'm going to give you will allow you to leave a voicemail for me. And I would love to hear from you. So you can ask me a question, or if you want to comment about the podcast or one of the episodes that I did, you're free to do that. And I might even share it on a future episode. Anyway, thank you so much, dental nerds. Until next time, I'm Dax Ska. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to my podcast. I appreciate your support on this journey, and until next time, I am Dax Scott.